What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to episode 213 of the Massive Breakdown Podcast. We are coming to you on a wonderful Tuesday evening. You would not believe the freaking difficulty we have had getting this podcast set up and ready to go. First off, I didn't remember we were recording on a Tuesday night until about 2 hours before the show. Which means I had no preparation done for the override weapons, which we were supposed to talk about tonight. Then second off, we start recording the first version of the episode and my computer just restarts literally out of nowhere. No warning. Just closes down in the middle of it. Lost my audio from that. So now we're restarting again. Thankfully, we were only a few minutes into the episode and not really in. Then we restart for a second time and my fucking mic is crackling like popcorn. So we had to restart a third time. So this is hopefully third time's the charm. Hopefully we're able to get episode 213 out there for you on this wonderful Tuesday evening. Let's go ahead and get the introduction out of the way. As always, I'm your host, Mercules, joined tonight by Kit Kutcha. For the third time, Kit, how are you doing this evening?
Well, I can't help but feel a little responsible for all of this. It is at least my fault that we are recording on a Tuesday. I had to request that we move this meeting of the minds up because I needed a few good nights sleep going into this weekend. As I am doing a 12-hour adventure race, I'll be navigating, trail running, biking, and paddling my way through the Texas Hill Country, literally from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. on Saturday. So it's gonna be quite the grueling affair. But needless to say, I need some Z's later this week, but I can probably get by on a Tuesday.
What you're saying is it would not be for the best if we stayed up until 2 a.m. on Thursday night like we normally do when we're recording this podcast.
That would probably hurt my performance on Saturday. I have to think I would not be on my A game. I usually even though it's just something that like I'm doing for fun, I'm not really like going in to like compete and win against the people who do this all the time and who are just insane. I still often have trouble sleeping the night before a big event. And so, like, yeah, two nights in a row of not sleeping would be deleterious, let's just say.
What you should do is you should stay up for 48 hours prior to the night before. That way you'll definitely sleep for a very long period of time. You know, we had some wonderful banter back and forth the first recording about this. It hurts. I don't feel like we can have that same level of banter the third time through because you know, it's just I can't do it. So
it is yeah, it's hard to talk about the same thing three times in a row in the span of 30 minutes.
Well, regardless, we do owe you guys an explanation. So we want to talk about the override weapons this week because this was very surprising to me. I thought I was going to have a couple nights to mess around. I played a lot with Grid Skipper, with Ignition Code, with Sojourner's Tale, with Shattered Cipher. Not a huge fan of the sidearm yet, but I was really saving up some playtime this week for Chroma Rush, which is the auto rifle. I've heard very good things about it. It has an exquisite perk pool. I'm really excited about the options. I actually like the 720 RPM autos. They just haven't really had a standout example in a while, so I was kind of hoping to play with it this week. Obviously, we moved it up, not going to, so I think what we're going to do is last week we had a bunch of podcast questions that people had asked us in the Discord, and I completely forgot about them all the way through the podcast. Literally didn't even remember them at all until the Star Wars episode that we were recording that I remembered them. So we're actually going to start this week's episode with the questions from last week, and then we're going to close out the episode with the Season Pass reward weapons, which is the Slug Shotgun and the Rapid Fire Machine Gun, which I feel like is a good compromise. Then next week when we come back, we'll finish up with the four override weapons. I feel like that'll give us enough time to kind of iron out the last couple of perk pairings that we want to play with and everything like that. So, yep. If there are no objections, I feel like that's a pretty solid plan for episode 213.
I think so. There are definitely some, you know, I have played with Chroma Rush in PvE and PvP, but there are still some perk combinations that I would really like to get my hands on that I have not been able to yet. It's an interesting gun, and I'd love to spend some more time with the rest of the weapons too before we talk about them, because at least a couple of them are probably worth having.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple of ways I figure out what stuff is good in PvP. Like, one of them is obviously I theorycraft just a ton. Like, when I'm not doing anything else, I'm often just thinking of combinations of stuff that I think would be well together. That's how I found Le Monarque and Messenger. It was actually a series of accidents, basically, but when I started thinking about why it was so good, it kind of all made sense, and then the rest of the play style fell into place, right? I entirely lost my train of thought. Like, literally can't even remember what I was trying to say at all. Like, literally can't even remember it.
So there's definitely some perk combinations that I still want to get my hands on. The perk pool, like you said, for Chroma Rush is just really exquisite. Grid Skipper also has some great perks, and I'd like to get a hold of maybe some different variations. And I do need to give the sidearm a fair shake as well.
Yeah.
The grenade
Okay.
launcher, I already quite like for PvE.
Oh God, the grenade launcher is just a monster. Slideshot, I don't know what they were thinking, but not a grenade launcher. But what I was gonna say about Chroma Rush, the way I figure out what things are good, besides just the normal theory crafting that I do, is what kills me a lot in PvP, right? Like, a lot of times people are like, oh well, if you haven't played with something, you don't really know what's good or not until you've played with it. And that's partially true, but it's not entirely true, right? Like, the way I figure out stuff that's really, really good is if I start seeing myself get killed a lot by one specific thing, especially if it's in the hands of a player who I don't think is really that good. Like, when I get killed by a 3.0 KD using a blue sidearm, I'm not like, oh, that blue sidearm is probably pretty good. I'm like, that player is very good, and they're just using a gun and wiping the floor with me because they're like Kami cakes, right? But when I'm getting killed over and over and over again by the same weapons in the hands of players, and I'm like, there's no way that player should have beat me in that engagement, then I start to take a second look at the weapons. Chroma Rush is absolutely one of those weapons where I'm seeing it more and more and more, and it is sometimes I round corners and just get freaking shredded by that gun. Crimson is another one of those weapons that I think is criminally underrated right now. Crimson is incredibly, incredibly strong. The Last Word, which we talked about a couple episodes ago, and I told you how strong I thought it was one of those things where some dude was killing me at like pulse rifle ranges with it, and I was like, what the heck is going on? And it turns out Last Word after the hip fire buff is extremely strong, right? So that's kind of one of the reasons why I want to give a little bit more time to Chroma Rush, because even though I haven't played with it yet, I have been killed by it enough to really want to keep my eye out for it. And I've seen the perk pool that it has, and I'm like, I know for a fact there's some great combinations in there. So that's kind of why I feel like we need to give it a fair shake.
Yeah, absolutely. With apologies and explanations and such like and so on out of the way, let's do a little housekeeping before we get too far into this episode. So we do have some thank yous. First off, the customary and always enjoyable massive shout out to our trifecta of patrons. These three guardians go above and beyond. They are incredibly generous to us, and by extension to everyone listening to the podcast, and we thank them. ZensoCal, thank you so much. The Shazzle, thank you so much. A Solitary Bird, thank you so much. Like I mentioned, these are our sponsor guardians. They are three very generous guardians from among a large cadre, a growing group of very generous guardians, our patrons. And we do have a new patron joining the fold this week. So a big welcome and thank you to Stranger Fork. I don't think I've seen you in Discord yet, but it looks like you did successfully link up the account to Discord, so hopefully we'll see you soon. And thank you to you, and thank you to all of our ongoing patrons, as ever, for your ongoing and generous support. I just used the word ongoing twice, and that really actually physically upsets me. But it's just that kind of night. We're just off. We're off our game tonight.
This is what happens when we record on a Tuesday. This is why we don't ever do Tuesday recordings, right? The Thursday, we've nailed it that Thursday is the night for Destiny Massive Breakdowns.
It's episode 213 is just cursed. It is.
Yeah.
It's just
Well,
cursed.
it's an episode that ends in 13, right?
It's
So I
not
mean, it is
helping.
to be expected. No, it is to be expected.
It's Tuesday the 213th.
Yeah.
Always
All right.
unlucky.
All right, so what we're gonna do, oh yeah, we do not have any podcast reviews this week to read out, which I wouldn't expect us to because it's only a couple of days since the last podcast that we recorded, right?
It's a Tuesday. So yeah,
if you guys do want to leave us a podcast review, please do. Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to a podcast. If you can't leave it on Apple Podcasts, please send it to us, because there's a chance that we won't be able to see it if it's elsewhere. But we will read the podcast review out on the air, provide you with a personal thank you. But like I said at the beginning of the podcast, what I do want to do is I want to get into some of these listener questions that were provided to us in the very wonderful pinned message in the podcast discussion channel and the Discord. So from now on, if you guys want...
It actually occurred to me, I don't know that this is really a review, but somebody did tag us on Twitter to someone else who was looking for some helpful Destiny content. And I thought it was really nice. And since we don't have any reviews, I was just like, you know what? We should throw a little random shout out for tagging us on Twitter and sharing the podcast with a fellow Guardian. So this goes out to Michelangelo on Twitter, who shared Destiny Massive Breakdowns with another Guardian. And here's what he said. Our Twitter handle, @DestinyMBP, the podcast ran by Mercules and Kit Kutcha, does an excellent job of breaking down Destiny weapons with a PvP focus. It is fantastic and will definitely increase your knowledge base.
And that sounds like a review. Yeah, if you told me that was left on Apple Podcasts, I would think it was a review.
Exactly. Exactly my point. Yeah, I just thought it was a really nice thing to say. And I really appreciated Michelangelo sharing the podcast on Twitter like that. And so I guess, you know, it's like, it's sort of a review. I think it counts.
Yeah. I was saying to you earlier, like, it is because of people like that sharing the podcast with their friends that we are about to eclipse, you know, knock on my wooden desk. We're about to eclipse our best month ever for listens. We should shoot pretty handily over 22,000 listens, which is the most we've had, except for this one weird time where we had like 25,000 listens a month for 4 months straight. And it was out of nowhere because we'd been getting like 5,000 listens a month prior to that. And just like out of nowhere, it was like we quintupled that for 4 months straight and then it went back to normal.
And yeah, that was a weird thing that happened.
It was like 4 years ago too.
The stats, like looking at the stats, it seemed like it was all coming from like one like data center in like Georgia or someplace. And like
one of like Richmond or something. It was something like weird.
Yeah,
like,
it was somewhere on the East
unassuming.
Coast.
Yeah, somewhere unassuming.
Yeah, like something got a hold of our feed and was just like running it on repeat at high speed every day. It was weird.
We don't count that. No, we don't. Which actually kind of sucks because it screwed up. Like we have this nice, beautiful chart of like steady growth, except that there's like this one massive spike in the middle that then like plummets precipitously off once it stops. And it's like, oh, that kind of ruins this like nice, beautiful chart that we had. But yeah, we are on the way to having our best month ever in terms of listens, which is pretty cool. And although it is sad news, Fireteam Chat has now called it quits for their weekly format, which means we will officially be, I believe, the second longest running Destiny podcast in existence. I think Planet Destiny 2 DCP is the only one that has run longer than us. We've actually been running since, I think, 2016 is the first time we put out an episode, so.
Yeah, it really has been that long.
And, I'm amazed we only have 213 episodes, and we've been going for 5 years. Like, I mean, I don't know why we would have more than that, especially because I took 4 months off to go actually, like, work at Bungie. And I think we also took some time off during, was it Curse of Osiris, that we were like, I don't know about this. Or maybe it was like Season of the Drift or something. There was one of those spring seasons where we were like,
it might have been Curse of Osiris. That seems like the kind of season where we would maybe say, this is.
Well, the weapons were all static rolled. So it was like, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it was Curse of Osiris. And I think we were like, okay, well, we're going to take a couple months off. We took a couple months off and stuff started to get, it was because stuff started to get better with Warmind. And then I left. Because I had to go work at Bungie. So we ended up taking like what basically amounted to like a 6 month span off.
Well, there's your podcast history lesson for the week.
In case you were curious, because I know a lot of people have come in recently, and please, for the love of God, do not go back and listen to our old episodes. Like,
We need to like remaster those or something, except we would have to completely re-record them because the audio quality was so bad.
Yeah, and I've deleted all of those old like master tracks, so there's no way for us to recover them without just re-recording them. We will not be doing that. What we will be doing is re-recording the IRL episodes.
We gotta hire some voice doubles to just like read the scripts.
But we don't even have scripts. They'd have to listen to it, transcribe it, read it. No, it'd be awful. Just it's not worth it. I'm telling you, don't go back. Right. We used to have a third co-host.
Yeah. Cougar,
you know, bless his soul, wherever he is now. He pops up every once in a while, and, you know, hits me up and just chats and, you know, pops back into Destiny Reddit or something like that. But yeah, we used to have a third co-host for, and he was like the sweat one of us, right? So it's like you were more PvE focused. I was more PvP focused. He was more trials focused.
Yeah.
So it was like an interesting dynamic. But yeah, if that feels like an eternity ago.
It was so long ago. Yeah, it's been interesting. Lets you know how old we are.
There's some nostalgia for you. Okay, let's move on from that. Let's focus on these listener questions. I think I was telling the story of how these came to be, but basically there's now a document in the podcast discussion channel of the Discord.
Yes.
If you would like to have a question read out on the podcast, you need to go to the podcast discussion channel and the Discord. You need to open that document, it's pinned at the top, and you will put your question in there, and then we will read it out. The reason why is because people are asking questions like during the week, and then the discussion would move on, and I would just like lose all these questions. So this is a much easier way. I can just open this up at the beginning of the episode. I will delete all the questions once you've answered them, and that way we'll like always have some listener questions ready, right? So I think that's good. So we got five of them. First one, Merc, be honest. Did you abuse the glitch with two-tap symmetry when the energy accelerant mod was bugged? And that's from Stigmeister. I did not, because I actually did not have the energy accelerant mod unlocked on my artifact. I'm ashamed to say. So I was very much looking forward to it. I was playing Trials at the time, and I was like, oh my god, the second I get this unlocked, I'm switching to symmetry, and I'm going to abuse the shit out of this. I was like, I feel like I'm owed this. And then they banned it within almost an hour of that. But not before we lost our flawless game to a group of three people using Telesto and the energy accelerant mod. So it was like they kept it alive just long enough to ruin my trials experience, but not long enough so that I could ruin other people's trials experiences, which is very disappointing.
That right there is just the story of every Guardian's life. I am not ashamed to say I also did not have the energy accelerant mod unlocked in time. I didn't hear about it until just a couple hours before they banned it. So that was that.
Yeah, I'm very disappointed to say I was playing with symmetry the entire day in control, but I was actually using it like a normal person, not with an energy accelerant. And I wonder if people thought that I was abusing the mod the entire time, but I wasn't. Like, I was actually getting my 8 headshots and then switching to the other thing. But yeah, so very disappointing. Question number 2, season 15 is purported date of improvements to the light subclasses to give them parity with stasis. It could be argued that the weakness to the light subclasses seems to be a near complete lack of utility in comparison to the stasis subclasses. Barring a complete overhaul, what's the likelihood these steps they take will be enough? And that's from Fatal.
So this is, I think, a good question, because the impression I have gotten is that they will not at this time be doing a complete overhaul, because it would literally be like on the back end an overhaul of how the light subclasses work. They would effectively have to replace them with new stasis style light subclasses, which is in fairness a serious amount of work. And probably something that I would expect in an expansion, but not necessarily a random season.
And season 15 is not going to be the expansion, because they've shifted all the seasons, right? So season 15 is actually the summer season. Is that what it is? And then season 16 is going to be the expansion, which is going to be closer to
winter? Should be. I believe it should be every 4, so it should be season 16.
Okay. Overhaul, obviously, like, the problem with the stasis subclasses, besides just the inherent strength of stasis, is the customization, and the fragments are just incredibly powerful. Like the biggest reason for me that I can't go back off of stasis is because the stat splits I can get with stasis with the fragments are actually insane.
They are.
Like they're actually crazy. So because of that, like I've got a stat split on my hunter with Oathkeepers. It's like I have 41 tiers total of armor. And like I wasn't even able to get within like five of that on my Night Stalker. So you know, that's hard, right? I feel like they could. I mean, here's a question I'll ask. If stasis were picked up as it is right now and dropped into D1, do you think it would still be overpowered? Or do you think it would kind of be on parity with the D1 light subclasses? Or if stasis were to get slightly nerfed and then picked up and dropped into D1?
It might depend on the era in D1 a little bit.
Let's just say the final era, right? Like, let's say the final era where fusion nades were meta, right? Like, let's drop them straight into that. We're not even gonna drop them into the era where Titan hammers were like running rampant. Like, let's just drop them straight into that last era.
That was actually literally what I had in mind. Like, back when Sunbreakers were literally invincible. I think by and large they would be fairly on par. It would depend obviously on which subclass and which choices you made within that subclass, how optimal you were. But I don't think they would necessarily be overpowered. The D1 subclasses had a lot of synergy built in, especially by the end, as they had been adjusted considerably from launch. And they had a lot of choices that you could make.
So here's what I will say.
That's my feeling.
Add about 20 or 30 damage to every light ability, grenade and melee, and you have about how strong they were in D1, right? Like, there are some that are further off, right? Like, some that are actually a little bit stronger, but not many, right? But if you add about 20 or 30 damage to every ability that is a light ability, you have about how strong they were in D1. Like, that's the biggest difference, is they came through and they cut every melee damage amount by 20, just like flat by 20. All of them do 20 damage less than they did in D1. And then the grenades, they took a little bit more of like a scalpel too, but in general it's about a 20 or 30 decrease, right? I believe that short of a total overhaul, if you just put the grenade and melee damages back to the way they were in D1 for the light subclasses, you would find that they are significantly more competitive. The thing was, the reason why stasis is so strong right now compared to light is because there's so much utility to the abilities. They don't necessarily do a ton of damage. There's a shit ton of utility to them. The problem with the light subclasses is they don't do a ton of damage, and there's no utility. They do more damage than stasis, but they generally don't do enough damage to kill you. If those abilities did enough damage to kill you, like incendiaries could kill you with a direct hit with a burn, fusions could stick you and one hit kill you, stuff like that, right? Like if
trip
the
mines
abilities did more,
could
trip mines
could unicorn you and
all of a sudden
kill you.
Their utility is now that they're a lethal ability, right? And that jumps them up to making them significantly more useful compared to stasis, which is not going to kill you immediately, may slow you, may potentially freeze you, although I hope that they're going to step off that in the next tuning pass, right? I think if you take stasis down to where nothing except for supers freezes you, and you bring light up to where all the abilities are doing their D1 damage values, I think you would see very nearly instant parity. It's not going to be exact, because obviously some light subclasses are just straight up going to be weaker, right? But I think the strongest light subclasses would be easily on par with stasis subclasses.
Yeah, that would definitely make the choice much more interesting. I will say I have been playing a fair amount of Invisible Dodge Hunter lately. And I'm actually enjoying it as a pairing with Lamonarch, because when they don't see you coming, I mean, it's just that much more effective. And it's also just a great get out of jail free card, because that's a more passive playstyle.
So I was thinking about that today when I was playing. So it's amazing the difference between Crucible when Iron Banner's here and everyone is playing, and the day after Iron Banner's here when no one except the Sweats are playing. So like, I went into a game of just normal control, and on the other team had, you know, a Flawless and an Unbroken and a Chosen, like three very good players, right? They're sweating it off. They're all running 120s and snipers, and it was Altar of Flame. So they're sniping. And I found, having used the Monarch a decent amount, that the only thing that counters me, like, I actually like when people use shotguns. It is the easiest thing in the game to kill shotgun players. The only thing that counters me is a good sniper.
Yeah.
Because we're basically acting at the same range and we have a similar, you know, hit pattern. So it's like, a good sniper will kill me when I'm using the Monarch. And I was literally thinking, like, fuck, I should be running Invis Hunter right now.
Yep.
Because I could walk around the corner. There's no scope glint from the Monarch. So
that is the literal exact reason why I switched to it, because I ran into a couple of games in a row, some talented snipers who just shut me down hard. And I had been having a bunch of good games before that. So I was like, okay, wow. I need to not be seen by them. And there was my answer. Right there. So it helps a ton.
Yeah. That is the hard counter to the Monarch Messenger, is a good sniper.
Yep.
But thankfully they're more active now because of that fucking occluded finality. Which, by the way, I did some more investigation on it. The thing that, so Cool Guy was 50% right. We talked about this last week, right? We said we'd revisit it. So he was 50% right. So he thought that there was a possibility that it was perfectly accurate from the hip. It turns out that it is. So snipers actually have a hipfire reticle. It's just invisible, right? Like, you can't see it. But they actually have a hipfire cone. And if you are aimed at a target when you're hip firing, it will actually hit that target, right? It pulls towards the body as opposed to pulling towards the head, unless you are aimed literally directly at the head, right? That's the only time you'll get a headshot, is if you're aimed, like, the one pixel width is over their head, and then you'll get a headshot, right? And there is some variation to it. It has a tendency to bounce the bullet around a little bit, right? Occluded finality seemingly is more capable of hip firing accurately than any other snipers are. The theory is because the 58 zoom is not just, the aim assist buff is not applied when you're ADS, it's applied all the time, right? And it helps. Seems that part is true. I personally took one into PvP and was trying to hip fire. Couldn't hit a fucking thing hip firing, right? It's not something I've tried to do before. So what I said was, I was like, Cool Guy, how often do you try to hip fire? He's like, oh, I practice it all the time. I was like, I think you're just fucking good at hip firing. I was like, I think this gun may be better than other guns at hip firing, but I think you're just really good at hip firing. Because I used this gun and, like, maybe I landed like two hip fire headshots in one game and was like, hell yeah. And, like, couldn't hit anything else the entire rest of the time. And I played like 10 or 15 games with it, like, trying. And just couldn't do it. So the other part that he was talking about, the increased zoom, increasing the AA, is extremely noticeable. Like, if you can deal with the 58 zoom, the increased AA you get is actually crazy. If you were, like, anywhere around the head, it's a crit shot at longer distances. Obviously, you have to be at a longer distance because the zoom is so high that if you're anywhere up close, it makes it really unwieldy. But I will say that as someone who liked Taxus in D1, the 58 zoom was not a problem for me, and I was using it, and I was like, oh, man, like, this is too much aim assist for a sniper. Like, this is a lot of aim assist.
I did notice occluded finality in my feed, for sure. Well, we've drifted a little bit from the question, but I think just to circle back, the answer is more damage for light subclasses for now. And
nerf to stasis, right? Like, stasis has to get nerfed in correspondence with that. Stasis continues to freeze you. It might as well be lethal. That's pretty much the way it works. But
yeah. Is it in terms of the abilities, right? Yeah, just so freezing abilities, aside from maybe Glacier Grenade, which sort of makes sense that it would freeze you, since it I don't know what else.
Even Glacier Grenade, I'm okay with it. Just like, so my suggestion was that that freeze or slow stacks would cap at 95 on Guardians, and anything that would have frozen you just immediately jumps you straight to 95, right? Because when you're at 95 slow, like you're pretty darn slow.
It's true.
And so what I would say is even a Glacier Grenade just jumps you straight to 95 slow, because if someone is shatter diving you or they're going to shatter the crystal, like you're barely going to be able to get out of that radius anyways, you know, and especially the new crystal formation that the hunter aspect gives, it makes the Glacier Grenade a circle, and you can trap people like literally in the center of it. And if they're slow, they can't jump. So they're actually stuck like in the center of this little wall of glaciers. And it's quite funny because they can't shatter them either because they'll kill themselves. So they just have to like sit there and wait until they're not slowed, and then they can jump out of it. So
Hilarious.
I have gotten very accurate with those glacier grenades. Like I'm hitting people with the glacier grenade and getting them frozen on it. I'm still using Shatter Dive, man. We're still out here.
I need to move back over to that, but until I put down the Monarch, I don't know if it's gonna happen. When I go back to hand cannon shotgun, I'll be going back to stasis, probably.
Ugh,
Maybe.
gross.
Maybe.
Gross.
I might
All
still
right.
invis that, because it's still invis is still good with it. But anyway, we're way off topic. Question number three. What weapons benefit the most from a 20% damage buff in PvP aside from 120s? Feel like there's a powerful PvP PvE build waiting to be made with Path of Burning Steps. Been using Hailing Confusion for two taps and Empty Vessel for splash damage, one hit kills. This question from Tribe 6.
I actually really like this question a lot, because it seems like Bungie has settled on like the 20% damage buff being their go-to buff for any like PvP damage buff. Charged with Light obviously does it. Now Path of the Burning Steps. It's kind of the exact same thing, and I actually have some very, very wonderful Charged with Light builds that I use. Unsurprisingly, one of them, Le Monarch, which will one-shot you if you give it the 20% buff.
Yeah, I've also noticed that there are some very, very crispy one shots I occasionally pick up.
It is fantastic. The other one, and probably my personal favorite, although I do this more on empowering Rift Warlocks, Ariana's Vow. Ariana's Vow is easy one taps. You can also do it on a hunter with lucky pants, right? I know he's talking about Titans with the new exotics and everything, but that's how I like to play it. So I'm gonna say that the two that I like the most are the Monarch and Ariana's Vow. You're already on the right path with Hailing Confusion, the 390 RPM pulse rifles, which is like Bygones for those of you who remember it. Those will two tap super super fast with the 20% damage buff because they only take two bursts instead of needing one shot from the third burst. Crimson is incredibly lethal, super fast two tap if you apply the 20% buff to it. So those are the four weapons I would recommend, three of which are exotics.
I would also mention, I don't think, let me just make sure I didn't miss this in there, but I feel like there could be a mention of Vigilance Wing there. Should make two taps there much, much easier than they currently are. Instead of
Vigilance
having
Wing
to.
is already like not a super hard gun to use right now. The only thing that sucks about it is you can't stick a counterbalance mod on it, but like it's already pretty strong gun to use.
Yeah. So I mean, I'm just saying, if you can make those two taps like reliable, that's pretty dirty. I think pulse rifles really are a great place to look for opportunities to take advantage of that kind of a damage buff.
Yeah, the next question is from AT Balls. He says, have you guys watched QJ's PvP sandbox video? If you have the time to check it out, I'd like to hear your thoughts on it. I have not watched it because obviously I didn't see it until I opened this document up and then didn't have time to watch it. But thankfully, he was wise enough to basically summarize the changes that he recommends. So he says, mainly interested in your thoughts about his proposed special ammo changes. Personally, I don't have large issues with the special ammo economy. I think it's integral to Destiny's identity, but I think Kuje's idea seems interesting. He suggests scavenger mods not work in PvP, so you only ever get one ammo on pickup, and each special weapon, based on its archetype, gets 1 to 4 shots on spawn. In a round-based game mode like Trials, Comp, excess special ammo does not carry over. Things like aggressive shotguns, grenade launchers get 1 shot, 2 shots for most other shotguns, and high-impact fusions of snipers, 3 shots for rapid-fire shotguns and non-high-impact snipers, and 4 shots for rapid-fire fusions. Personally, I do not like that idea. I feel like there may be a slight bit too much special ammo in PvP, but it is nowhere near egregious. And I don't feel like limiting the ammo of special weapons addresses the root cause of the problem, which is that primary weapons are still way too weak. Primary weapons should be stronger across the board, right? Like, special weapons are weaker than they've ever been at any point in time in Destiny's history, with the exception of aim assist on snipers. Shotguns are weaker, fusions are weaker. Now, fusions aren't projectiles anymore, which helps, but damage-wise, they're significantly weaker. The difference is that primary weapons are so, so incredibly weak compared to D1. And that's the difference. I don't feel like neutering special ammo is the solution to that. I feel like buffing primary weapons is the solution to that. And I feel like if you were to implement this type of system, number one, it would shit on sixes, which is super unfortunate because sixes doesn't need this. I think the only thing you could implement is you just have excess special just not carry over between round-based game modes. And that would solve a lot of the problem for trials and comp.
Yeah, I guess I would say, you know, as somebody who does not play a lot of trials and comp, I play comp to get the powerful reward because I'm in PvP anyway and I might as well. I don't really play trials unless there's something I want to chase and I happen to have a lot of time on my hands, because for me, the big time investment and the reward really has to be worth it for it to be worth the stress. So, you know, maybe there's something there for round-based games, but I would agree with AT Balls that I don't have a problem with the special ammo economy at this time. And I would agree with you that special weapons are just not overpowered. You can, if you're good and you're playing with a meta weapon, you can main them. But typically, it doesn't really make you unbeatable if somebody else plays well. I think that's different from the way some special weapons worked in Destiny 1. At various points, there were special weapons where the only way to beat you was to play with the same gun or to sit in the back and snipe. And I'm looking at you, Universal Remote, which was broken on multiple occasions.
And No Land Beyond.
And No Land Beyond. Yeah. No Land Beyond, the gun that was broken after everything else was nerfed. So
Universal Remote was the same way, though. Universal Remote was shit at the beginning. Universal Remote and No Land Beyond both have a lot of similarities.
I think, actually, Universal Remote was actually super strong first, and they nerfed it almost immediately because it was way too strong, but then they nerfed all shotguns. There were a bunch of changes in there, and at some point, suddenly Universal Remote had, like, twice the range of any other shotgun. It was just dumb. Anyway, we're talking about things that half our listeners don't even know exist.
I would hope more than half of our listeners play D1. I mean, it's conceivable that they might not have. We have double the listeners now that we did during D1, but
yeah.
You know, I would hope that at least some of them have played.
25%. Anyway, point is that special right now I think is at a fine place. And, you know, there's a reason that we play with certain primaries that are relatively easy to use and allow us to get kills very quickly. And we ignore other primaries that don't. And if every primary or if more primaries fell into that easy to use and killed relatively quickly, then instant kill weapons, by comparison, become less appealing, because they require you to either have really good aim, if snipers ever get their aim assist nerfed, or to get up super close, like a shotgun. So You know, I think, you know, not to sound like a broken record, but the real solution is sort of not to worry about special right now, but to worry about, you know, subclasses being terribly unbalanced, and then to maybe look at primary weapons, which Bungie has said they're going to do, and I hope that they do.
All right. And the last question from Supersay says, with the recent release of Hung Jury and the overhyping of it with Box Breathing, what is something you feel is or was overhyped and is or was nowhere near as good as people like to believe? So I actually had to think a little bit about this, and the only thing that I could come up with in recent memory is the 180 hand cannons and the whole movement of, like, if they get kill clip, they can 3-crit and it will be just like Not Forgotten and Luna's Howl all over again. And, like, I just never actually see that get played out in PvP, no matter how many times we talk about it. And it happens every time there's a new 180 that can roll with that. I just never actually see that come to pass.
So I had a lot of trouble thinking of something, but I would say fusion rifles periodically get overhyped considerably. Occasionally there's a tweak that needs to be made, but it's usually not the heavy banhammer that comes down upon them and nerfs them into the ground. And just since we're talking about Destiny 1 a lot this episode, a throwback, I'm also going to say House of Wolves PvP was way overhyped, and a lot of people said it was perfect PvP, and I just don't agree.
I liked House of Wolves PvP. Isn't House of Wolves PvP the pulse rifle meta, or is that,
that
the...
No, this was when Thorn and the Last Word could two-tap from across the map.
Oh, yeah, then no. My favorite meta was, I guess, immediately pre-House of Wolves. It was the messenger meta. It was the original messenger meta when it was high impact pulse as a hopscotch pilgrim, and it literally, I feel like, was like a month or like 6 weeks.
Well, I think there was,
then it was gone,
like either right at the end of House of Wolves or right immediately after. What was the, was it the Taken King came out?
The Taken
right
King
after
came
that.
Out,
yeah.
Following it, yeah.
I think there was a pulse rifle meta right at the beginning of the Taken King that I really enjoyed.
That was, I feel, peak Destiny PvP. I really, truly believe that. But because hand cannons were good, but they weren't the strongest. Auto rifles were still good because they hadn't gotten neutered yet. They got neutered hard in Taken King. Pulse rifles were good. The only things that were bad were scout rifles. And even some scout rifles were still okay. Like, Mida was still decently strong at that point in time. It was a far more balanced sandbox than anyone gave it credit for, but it was over so quickly that it was just like a blink of an eye, and then it was gone.
Well, you know, Bungie felt that Thorn needed to be able to two-tap from the far end of the map, and that
the last word should
also be able to two-tap, but not from the far end, just from like 3/4 of the way to the far end.
Yeah, you had the last word killing it literally like 50 meters hip fire, and it was like,
you were landing crits at 50 meters. It was wrong. It was a wrong thing. And I was also not great. I actually got pretty good at using Thorn at that point in time. And I thought PvP sucked. I really didn't enjoy it. I did it for the loot and because my friends liked it.
People out there will disagree, but that is when the TTK swings too far to overpowered primaries, right?
Yeah.
Like when the time to kill of very long range guns starts slipping under, you know, 2/3 of a second, starts getting closer to a half a second, which is what those two guns had.
Yeah.
They had, you know, the last word actually had like
a quarter second
TTK.
Yeah. It was 0.25.
Yeah. And Thorn was like 0.57 or something. And then they would burn out and you could just leave them. Right. Like,
yep.
That was when it became too fast and there was no counterplay. If they hit their two shots first at all, didn't matter what you had, nothing at all. Like, that is when it gets too. I'm a firm proponent, and you keep things between 2/3 of a second and 1 second, and that is the golden window. And actually, right now we're in between that golden window. If you actually look at the TTKs across the board, the problem is those TTKs that are on the higher end, most of them are actually unachievable because they require near perfect crit consistency, which just isn't realistic, right? Like those need to be actually achievable TTKs, not just like, oh, the optimal TTK, if you hit 8 crits with a 4-burst pulse rifle, it's like, well, nobody's fucking hitting 8 crits with a 4-burst pulse rifle. Like, it's not happening, especially with the stability all jacked up, you know, the way it is in D2. Like, it's not happening. So, you know, it's, I don't, what were we talking about again?
Things that were overhyped.
Yeah. Oh, you said fusion rifles, which made me think of every time a Destiny 2 YouTuber makes a video about any gun, that is them overhyping any gun at all. Literally any gun. Every single time. Actually, yes. Every single time that I see a video on my timeline on Twitter of a Destiny 2 YouTuber talking about a gun, it is the best gun ever, bar none. And then you watch them and you're like, oh, wait, no, you're actually just incredibly good at this game. And nobody else is ever going to be able to use the weapon the way you're using it.
I feel like you're painting with broad strokes there. And I'm going to go ahead and say we should probably just
I will give Cool Guy a pass. I feel like Cool Guy, when he says stuff is good, usually has pretty good reasons for it being this hip fire with the occluded finality thing. Maybe not so much, but the rest of his reasons why occluded finality is good, I feel like it's good. But there are a couple of you out there who I doubt listen to this show at all, but I'm sure the people who do listen to the show know who I'm talking about. There's at least three of them out there that are very much like every time they post a video, it's like, this is the best gun ever. And almost 0% of the time is it actually the best gun ever in anyone's hands other than theirs.
Yeah, I see plenty of those videos in my feed, and I never watch them. I don't even know, honestly, who's posting them at this point. But, well, that's our listener questions. And some answers, I think, that they didn't even realize they were asking for. But I think we've shared a great deal of ancient wisdom from back in the day.
And somehow gotten to like 45 minutes into the podcast without actually talking about the two weapons we want to talk about. So
I think it's
probably time to talk about the season pass weapons. So first off, we've got Sojourner's Tale, which is the precision slug shotgun that you get in the season pass. It's a solar special weapon. I actually got to say, I really like this gun. I used it for a little bit in Iron Banner because it required shotgun kills and I didn't have another shotgun on me, so I just used this one. And I had forgotten how incredibly strong slug shotguns are.
So I was a little disappointed, actually, when I saw the stats on this gun, because they had been releasing slug shotguns with nice, high, helpful aim assist stats. And then they came out with Sojourner's Tale, and they went back to the old style where it's like 35. And I was just like, okay, I mean, I already have first in, last out. Do I need you too? I don't know. And I might, because Sojourner's Tale has some real tasty looking perks. Truly it does. But I just have to say that I was disappointed that they decided to go back to the old low aim assist on these. That is for me a big point against Sojourner's Tale, because that's part of what made like Heritage, for example, feel so easy to use and make it, you know, for me, a competitive option. If I'm wanting a slug shotgun, I've got Chaperone, I've got Duality, and I've got Heritage, because it has that really helpful aim assist buff.
And Blasphemer from Altars of Sauron.
And Blasphemer.
Although I think that's is that sunset now, or do they bring it back?
They sunset it and then brought it back right after I got a perfect roll on it. And I have not gone and chased the new one yet. Yes, Blasphemer is also an option, and actually, I don't now recall, I should look, if Blasphemer is the high aim assist type.
It is.
It is. Okay, indeed. I thought it was, because I put some effort into chasing that role, so
yeah,
I thought that it was.
It, Bone Chiller from Europa, and Heritage from DSC are all the high aim
assist. Bone Chiller is also very tasty.
So let's compare it to Bone Chiller and Heritage then, because that's probably the fairest comparison. So the range is sitting right in the middle at 65, which is actually kind of not necessarily on the lower end. Maybe it's like average for precision slugs. They vary between 60 on the lowest end, which is Bone Chiller, and 71 on the highest end, which is Heritage, actually. So it's kind of right there in the middle. The stability, not that it matters a ton, is 46. Heritage is 49. Bone Chiller is 47. Reload speed is 50. Heritage is 50. Bone Chiller is 48. The handling is 67, which is massive compared to Bone Chiller's 42, but Heritage, being a raid weapon, has 73. Look, I'm just gonna straight up say, like, Heritage all around is stat-wise the best slug shotgun that you can get. It is extraordinarily good. Because it also has 68 aim assist, whereas Sojourner's Tale has 35. And then they both have 6 in the mag, right? Like, that's the bigger difference, right? So if you can get a Heritage with some decent rolls on it, you absolutely should, because it is just disgustingly, disgustingly good. Problem being that Heritage does not roll with opening shot, right?
That is the one downside to it.
Now you can get slide shot and you can get moving target, which are very, very good perks. So, don't sleep on it just because it can't get opening shot, but it cannot get opening shot, which is unfortunate because opening shot to me is like the S tier perk for slug shotguns.
On the other hand, Bone Chiller can roll with opening shot. And I think Blasphemer can as well.
And the only downside you're going to get with Bone Chiller is that you're going to have a little bit less range. You'll have a noticeable amount less handling. But you make up for that by having almost double the aim assist. So.
And I mean, certainly I don't want to downplay the benefits of handling on any shotgun. But a lot of times when I'm running a slug, I'm not swapping to it kind of last second. It's something that I know that I'm going into a closer encounter or that someone is pushing on my location and I'm swapping ahead of time. So it's less of a concern, but that is playstyle dependent. And certainly if I have the choice, having more handling is always nice.
So if we're talking perks, there's actually only really one roll that I want on Sojourner's Tale. It's pretty simple. They capped how much range can help on slug shotguns, which is a little bit unfortunate, but it's okay. That's why we want opening shots. But I still like to get one range perk, and I really want to get the range perk in the barrel if I can, because what that does is it frees me up to use assault mag in the magazine slot, which increases my rate of fire, which is vitally important just in case you do miss the headshot and you hit a body shot. That quick follow-up is going to make a big difference. So I had to go Hammerforged Rifling, Assault Mag. In the trait slots, there's really only one role that I personally am interested in, and it's Moving Target Opening Shot. That's, of course, a 100% PvP-centric role. I know that there's a big push to use these guns for PvE. They use basically two slug shotguns for DPS and boss damage.
Slug shotties are super effective for DPS if you're going up against the boss that you can get close enough to. That said, I would say that there are a few perks in that first trait column that I would be interested in for PvP. I think tunnel vision is something that I would be, if it dropped, I would very much be interested to see how it performed. Getting an extra buff to aim assist and ADS speed, even for a short duration, is, I mean, very helpful on a gun like this. Definitely gives you the option or the maybe the ability to win something vaguely like a 2v1, or at least to start chaining kills. And then quick draw. Depending on your playstyle, can be incredibly helpful for getting the weapon out. Obviously, it's not quite as useful, quite as powerful as it used to be, but I think it still has significant utility just for swapping to the gun a little bit faster. And then second column for PvP, obviously, yeah, opening shot. Like, there's just nothing else. But for PvE, it's got Frenzy, which is a fan favorite. So
Slug shotguns really making a resurgence in PvE right now, which is interesting. I don't know about the dual slug shotgun thing. Maybe it's because I'm a controller player, but I find that technique to be very hard to do.
Oh, I totally did that for the boss fight of Deepstone Crypt.
Were you able to do it pretty well? I don't know why. I don't know. It's like a lot of button pressing and.
Is there something? I just emptied one and then swapped and then.
No, I'm talking about the one where you swap in between the two so you get faster rate of fire.
Oh,
so
nobody.
So you shoot one and then you swap to the next one, and you shoot that one and you swap. Like you swap them back.
Nobody
and
told
forth.
Me to do that.
Yeah, so you just use one and then use the other? Well,
yeah, they said, oh, yeah, you should use two. And I was like, okay, sure, I got two. I might as well.
Well, there you go. No, I'm talking about the thing they're doing on PC where they literally fire one, swap to the next, fire it, swap back. And then so they basically shoot, 14 shots in a row and it skips the rate of fire. Limitations on it because you can basically swap faster than obviously
awesome.
You have to like max handling speed and stuff like that, but yeah, I
would assume that people are writing macros for that because good lord.
Yeah, or I mean I guess on a keyboard you're just like pressing one key like do 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 and you're clicking with a separate hand, right? Like for me it's you have to press Y to swap, so you have to move your hand off of the stick that pushes your aim down, so they're like constantly jumping up every time you fire, so maybe that's just why it's really difficult for me.
Yeah it would be easier with mouse and keyboard.
Yeah, all right, well next up is Shattered Cipher. Shattered Cipher is a rapid fire machine gun. Not a huge fan of the rapid fire machine guns. I was able to use a thermal erosion, the one from Europa, and like finally get a good role where it like felt stable and easy to use, and just we've said this before, but in PvP you just get shit all for ammo. Someone did tell me that there was a way to get like 7 extra shots if you got the magazine size up over a certain amount, which it turns out the rapid fires are over by default, but you get like 29 shots, which in a rapid fire is nothing at all, considering best case scenario you're killing someone in 8 crits, which is never going to happen. More realistically, it's taking you 11 body shots, so it's like you might get 2 kills out of it.
Yeah.
But like, even then, maybe not.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is that it's not good in PvP. Like, it's just not feasible to use rapid fires as a player versus player weapon. That said, I've used it in Override. And I think it's fine. It's got tons of ammo, and it's a great way to knock out all those machine gun bounties that they keep throwing at us. So,
yeah, I mean, sheesh. The only way I could even consider using this, because it's like, it kind of sucks, right? Because if you were using it in PvE, the stats are so bad. The recoil reduction is 45 by default. I guess we should probably talk about the stats here and how terrible they are before we talk about perks. So. The range is 28, which is horrible even for a rapid fire. Most of the rapid fires are at like 33, 37. I mean, what was it? Temporal, or was it 21% delirium, which was the old Gambit one, was at 50, right? Like, it's at 28. The stability is 40. Edgewise, the old Vanguard Pinnacle was at 56. 21% delirium was at 70. I guess the closest one that you would think about would be Thermal Erosion, which is at 38, so it's about the same. Reload speed is 68, which is pretty good. Handling is 41. Aim assist is 64, which is, again, the lowest of the rapid fires. Not by a lot, but the highest would be 70, 68, somewhere around there. The recoil direction is 45. Literally 45 recoil direction. So it's going probably more sideways almost than it is up and down.
I mean, let's be honest. The stats are abysmal. The stats are pretty bad on all of the rapid fire machine guns. This one is very much following that rule.
Talk about a useless archetype, like a straight up useless archetype. And then the mag size is 75, which is the only benefit that it has. So can't recommend this gun for PvP at all. Just like flat out. The only way I can even see it conceivably playing well in PvE is if you're just like, fuck it, maximum mag size.
And that really is what I would probably aim for. What I would want is as much stability as I can get out of the barrel perk. And then appended mag, field prep, probably surrounded for a nice convenient damage buffer. Maybe rampage would also be fine. Honestly, I wouldn't be upset by Zen Moment. Because it would actually probably do something on this gun. Because then if you throw on a backup mag, and maybe you get lucky, you get a stability masterworks that you can actually hold the gun steady. You end up with something like 109 rounds in the mag. And just absolute boatloads in reserve.
Yeah, I think if you use backup mag and extended mag, you get 115. And, I mean, I would have to go with, like, field prep or auto-loading holster for PvE. I mean, I guess you could use, like, slideways and just, like, slide to put some ammo back in the magazine. Like, I guess you could, like, slide while you're doing DPS, maybe. But no, because you have to sprint to slide. So
I think field prep is probably the best choice for the extra reserves, and because you can just crouch and then reload, and it is
super fast.
Much faster.
It basically maxes out the reload when you're crouched, right?
It's plus 45 and a 0.8x multiplayer.
Yeah, even with extended mag, it maxes out the reload. So I would probably use in the last slot, I would probably actually use Adrenaline Junkie, because if you can get a couple grenade kills before you start DPS, you get a 33. Well, you get it basically is like 10 or 11 per kill, right? So if you get like 3 grenade kills, you get 33% damage buff, which lasts 10 seconds. So Adrenaline Junkie, you know, surrounded is pretty good, but surrounded you have to leave the ads alive. I kind of like Adrenaline Junkie more than that. Just save up a grenade, get a kill with it.
That's 33%
fair. Damage buff with field prep, with extended mag, with backup mag, you're doing 115 shots. Like, you're probably going to empty, you're easily going to empty that in 10 seconds, right? And you're going to have the damage boost for the entire time. I think that's a pretty strong option for PvE, actually. That's probably the only role that would really, like, pique my interest.
Yeah, I could totally see that. Otherwise, yeah, I don't know that this gun really has, but, I mean, it's a void machine gun. If you need a void machine gun, then it's there for you, but it's no hammerhead.
It never is a hammerhead, it seems. It seems we keep waiting. And although Corrective Measure did come out, I guess we probably need to talk about the Vault of Glass weapons at some point.
We do, yeah. They're going to be good, I think. So.
It's going to be hard for me. Haven't run the Vault of Glass yet.
Yeah, I need to do that as well. But one thing at a time.
Who wants to carry the Massive Breakdown podcast host through the Vault of Glass?
Well, you know, we've got a crossplay beta live right now. I think there's a strike playlist.
Yeah, just for strikes.
That you can go and test out crossplay for Bungie, and get a little emblem as a reward. But it's coming. So looking forward to that.
All right, Guardians. Well, we will, I think that's it for this episode. Don't think we have anything else. So, it's going to be a long break from us. We are not going to be back until next Thursday, which is all the way in June. But I think we're going to have season 4 of the Clone Wars. Is that's our 2-week cadence, right? So next week we're gonna do season 4 of the Clone Wars as well.
That's right. Yep. Season 4 of the Clone Wars, more weapons broken down. I believe we're finally going to do the override guns if everything goes to plan, and should be a good time.
We should do the override guns. We owe it to them. It's been a while.
We really need to.
All right, guys. Well, thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Peace.